County's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And you're very welcome back to the show into the second hour. It's 9 minutes past 10 o'clock on this Monday morning. You can call us at 074-91-25000. Caroline taking your calls this morning. You can text us 086-60-25000. That number good for WhatsApp messages as well. You can also use social media. We are Highland Hub on Facebook. We're at Highland Radio on X or Twitter, or I think we all probably still call it Twitter. So we're at Highland Radio on that. And we're also on other social media channels as well. You can watch the show unfold on our Facebook pages and also on our YouTube channel, Highland Radio Ireland. And you can also, of course, you can wind back if you're on the YouTube channel in particular. If you go onto YouTube, you can just go back and listen to parts of the earlier parts of the show immediately. On the whole show, of course, will be podcast on our website and available on our Facebook pages and on YouTube afterwards as well. So plenty of opportunities to access it. Now, caller asks, if we've been through Newton Cunningham Village recently, you really should. It's a shambles and it's going to get worse. It's making the road far too narrow for a farming village and a busy village. Another waste of taxpayers' money. Should never have gotten this bad. It's an embarrassment. Thanks for highlighting this. Now, I know there is a major project underway in Newton at the moment. Funding has been allocated and works are ongoing. So maybe if we were to wait until those works are finished and we see what the finished product is. I know there is work underway and it's not finished. So I think I would, at the very least, reserve judgment until the work has been done. Caller saying, I see a lot of folks not wearing seatbelts on the bus. Another caller says, when the Gardaí stop using mobile phones, other drivers will. I don't think they need to use them as an excuse. Pull over if you want to use it like normal people. Now, in fairness, I don't think there is. I mean, you know, the idea that Gardaí go up and down on their mobile phones day in, day out and every day. I know certainly Gardaí have certain exemptions and certain exceptions from the law to allow them to do their jobs. I also know that Gardaí are very, very specifically, and any Garda who drives a Garda car has got very specific training to drive a Garda car, and they are driving the car under the conditions of the training that they have received. I think I never accepted that sort of, well, they do it, so I'm going to do it, or they don't do it, so I won't do it. I suppose the bottom line is the law and the recommendation is that we don't. And whatever Gardaí or anybody else does is their business. It's all very well saying slow down and drive with care, but I've never understood rallying sport on our roads. I can understand if it's in certain areas like tracks, but allowing rallying on our roads only encourages young people to speed and feel they're rally drivers. I think it's time the sport of rallying on public roads was looked at. Now, I think in fairness, rallying on public roads takes place under very specific, very controlled circumstances. It takes place on roads that are closed by drivers who know what they are doing. Yes, there can occasionally be tragedies, as we have seen just this weekend. But, you know, to sort of to draw a comparison between rallying and driving on the road, and, you know, the argument then becomes, okay, you get rid of rallying, but then are people trying to emulate Formula One cars? Are people trying to emulate the Grand Theft Auto games they play on their PlayStations? I'm not sure. I've never quite bought the equivalence argument that rallying causes young people to do X, Y, or Z. Certainly, I think there always needs to be a discussion, though. That's the one thing I would say. I absolutely agree with that. There always needs to be a discussion, and nothing should be off the table in terms of discussions. But, I'm not sure banning rallying would immediately lead to a reduction in incidents on the roads. I'm not sure it would. Perhaps I'm wrong. And a caller says, and let's take a birthday request before we go for the bingo numbers. Happy 66th birthday to Dominic O'Donnell in Rafoe. And that comes from Rodney and Darren. So unless I'm very much mistaken, Dominic, that entitles you to a couple of quid from the state from now on. So all the best with that. And we wish you all the best and we wish you well. This is the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. And as we promised before 10, we're going to discuss food allergies now. Sarah Keogh is a registered dietitian and an advisor to Safe Food. And she joins us this morning on Zoom. Sarah, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm very well indeed. Sarah, I suppose the first thing we need to speak about really is what is a food allergy? Because there is in some areas a suspicion that food allergies have become almost cool that people say, oh, I'm gluten intolerant and I'm lactose intolerant. And some people are, absolutely some people are. And some people sort of aren't really, but they are because they think it's the thing to be. Is that an utterly unfair thing to say?
It's a little bit unfair, to be sure. I mean, there was certainly a big fad about 7 or 8 years ago where everybody was going gluten-free for fun, really. But I have to say, working as a dietitian for nearly 30 years at this stage, very few people really want to cut out foods unless they absolutely have to. And I think what you're looking at is if the person is still doing it a year later, they're definitely not messing. And so when we look at things like gluten, you know, we know a lot of people are have celiac disease. And we know that around 10% of people are lactose intolerant. So that's actually very common. So we do see a lot of it. So I would always say, you know, if someone says, I really can't eat that food, we really have to take them at their word for it. Because I have to say, aside from the big gluten-free fad that was there about 7 or 8 years ago, the vast majority of people do need to avoid foods. But you have a very good question about allergies. And an allergy is it's quite different to a food intolerance, in the sense that it's a reaction that you will get every single time you eat even a tiny, tiny piece of the food. Whereas with an intolerance, a person can usually tolerate a very tiny bit. Now, it's there up to them how much they can tolerate. But with an allergy, even a very tiny amount will trigger quite the reaction for that person.
In terms of, and we're aware of, say, peanut allergies and things like that, and the risk of anaphylactic shock and things like that. But does it go further than that? Because we've had a couple of calls, and I just want to bring one of the comments that we've had. Caller says, my 10-year-old daughter is constantly crying from stomach pains. She sits on the toilet 15, 20 minutes at a time. Pains at night seem to be worse. Now, she does have a good varied diet. She drinks a lot. Any suggestions on what we should do? Could it be that she is eating something to which she has an allergy? And the most important question, how do I go about finding out if that's the case?
Well, first place is your GP. So you're going to go always to your doctor. So what we don't recommend is getting food intolerance tests done, because they're not reliable at all. So you always go to your GP. What you'd be looking at for someone, if you have a child at that level, is you're going to rule out celiac disease, which does cause constipation in children, and especially if she has that much pain. Really important to keep eating gluten. Don't stop the gluten, stay on it, because otherwise any tests you do come back negative. But I'd definitely be going into the GP, ruling out celiac disease, and then getting a referral to a registered dietitian to have a look and see what's going on there with that, for sure.
A caller asks, how do you get tested for allergies? How much does it cost and where can you get it done? Now, I think you may have partially answered that already. Mm-hmm. You don't recommend going to, and you see various places advertised, you don't recommend that necessarily. You believe always you would say the GP is the first protocol.
Well, that's exactly it. And I mean, one of the reasons I'm working with Safe Food at the moment is that the European Food Safety Authority have a campaign at the moment, hashtag EU Choose Safe Food. And they're really about, across Europe, getting people to really think about where they're going for advice on food, where their information is about food, because I think we're absolutely swamped. As you said, you see advertisements for different things like that and food intolerance. So if you think you have an allergy, you go to your GP. What you also need to do as well is to see a registered dietitian and get a good history, because what you don't want is to go to your GP and get everything tested. Because if you test, there's a blood test, it's called an IgE blood test. And if you get all of those, a couple of those will come back positive, but you only have an allergy if that is both positive and you have a reaction. So what you'll always do is you'll target one or two particular things. And if you see a registered dietitian, they'll be able to do the right history, look at your symptoms and give you an idea of what to go and get tested. But it's allergy testing is always with your GP. It is never anywhere else, because we see people getting IgG food intolerance tests done and they are not reliable at all. And I see people spending €200 and €300 on those, and they're really not of any value in terms of diagnosing food intolerance.
Now, we as individuals who are adult can go to a GP and we can explain how we feel. We can tell the story. We can give our history. We can speak to somebody. We can interact back and forth. And by that interaction, a picture can be built up and then the appropriate tests is done. Let's talk about babies, because can't. And in many, many cases, babies, and we've one caller, I think my newborn grandson has an allergy to milk. He's constantly throwing up and crying, it seems, with stomach pains. How do you test a child this young? And I suppose that then begs the question, how can you get an accurate story from a child that young when they're just not able to tell you what they're feeling?
So what parents know And I'll say that every single time. Parents know when there's something wrong with their child. And what you are looking at is symptoms. And so what you do as a parent, if you think a child does have a food allergy, you'll look at, you know, when and where did it start, particularly for babies. So if it's something like cow's milk protein allergy, you might have vomiting, stomach pain, babies who are, you know, really, really distressed and upset. Especially if they have that alongside eczema, there's a much higher chance that they do have some sort of food allergy with that. But sometimes getting it diagnosed, very often, you know, sometimes people go, oh, it's just colic. A little bit of colic is a bit of crying for an hour or two a day. A baby who's got arched back screaming and vomiting for 10 hours a day has something more serious going on. So what I'd always say to parents is you record them when they're distressed, which seems like a very odd thing to do, but you do just record them when they're that distressed and crying. And you write down, you keep a diary of how often that happens, how long it goes on for, how often do they vomit, and you bring that to the GP. And once the GP sees those kind of symptoms, they'll be able to refer them for more testing. And they can, those IgE tests do work on babies as well, but you will need to go to the hospital to have that test done.
One piece of advice you sometimes hear is that people are told, oh, don't give your baby peanuts or eggs or certain foods until they're well over a year. Actually, it may be the opposite.
Totally. And, you know, you've hit the nail on the head with that, that we talk about food allergies a lot. And one of the reasons that Safe Food is joining with the European Food Safety Authority on this campaign is really to say to parents, the most important thing to do is give babies those foods around 6 months. Don't wait. Because we know the longer that parents wait to give their babies things like milk, eggs, peanut and so on, it actually is more likely they'll get a food allergy. So if you give these foods to babies around 6 months, they are actually less likely to go on to be allergic to them. And you're right, a lot of parents do get this wrong information about weaning babies, what to do. And parents are nervous as well. They think, well, you know, what if they do have a reaction? But food allergies, although we talk about them in children, are relatively rare. It's not common. And usually the very first reaction is quite mild. So you would just notice there's a reaction. You're unlikely to get any very serious reaction with the first food. So it's really important around 6 months that babies get to have things like milk, fish, peanut. So what you can use is smooth peanut butter, you know, spread onto something or just given in a tiny bit. Just remember, peanut butter is very sticky. So don't give a baby sort of a teaspoon of peanut butter. That can actually get a bit stuck for them. But we really want babies to get those foods. And then once you've given them to them and everything is fine, make sure they get them once a week, because it just keeps reminding the body that these foods are safe. And that's what we really want to do. We want them brought in early and the body recognizes them as safe if they come in early. And if you keep giving them, the body continues to recognize these foods as safe. And we do see a big reduction in risk of food allergy where babies are getting these allergen, what we often call allergenic foods at around 6 months.
Caller says there is nothing nice about gluten intolerance and it's very costly. No. And believe you me, caller, I know, because I had a sister who was diagnosed as celiac in the late 1960s. And I remember in the 70s, now, and she was, and my mother was involved in setting up the very first celiac association in this country, as it happens.
Oh, really?
And in the late 1960s, early 70s. Yeah. She spent 2 years in hospital, actually, when she was a baby. But I mean, I remember her going to birthday parties with a little plastic bag that had the bit of cake and the bit of bread that she could eat, because she could eat nothing. And believe you me, this is pre the days when all our major biscuit and cake manufacturers make gluten-free models. What you had was horrendously horrible stuff. I remember trying it and thinking, oh my God, how can anyone eat this stuff? But however, I know all about how costly and how nasty gluten intolerance is. And I was by in no way being flippant at the start, by the way, caller. But the caller goes on to, with a question for you, Sarah, which is, what are your thoughts on kinesiology? And then I'm going to add the question, what is kinesiology?
So it's a range of different things. I wouldn't be a huge expert on it. What I would say to you in terms of food allergies and intolerance, it's not a reliable way to diagnose or rule out allergies or intolerance. So if someone does think they are having a reaction to their food, it's your GP to rule out something more serious and then a registered dietitian just to check it out with that. sorry about this. I would definitely be looking back to your GP if you think you have any food intolerances with it. And just be careful. What I would see an awful lot, and I do actually work with the Celiac Society, is people who have gone, you know, away from their GP or the registered dietitian, and sometimes they end up cutting out huge amounts of foods, which are totally unnecessary. with that. And we see even children coming in with issues around, you know, being deficient in certain nutrients because someone has done sort of a blanket ban around, oh, everybody needs to cut out dairy or everybody needs to cut out wheat. So we just need to be really careful that we don't disturb someone's nutrition by cutting out too many things. And that's why I'd keep saying back to your GP, back to your registered dietitian.
If a baby has severe eczema, that may have a story to tell, and it may be a flag.
So interestingly, eczema causes food allergies rather than food allergies causing eczema. And that's a funny one to get your head around. So what often happens is if a baby has eczema, the barrier on the skin is a little bit weak. So food might come in through the skin instead of coming in through the stomach. And if food comes in through the skin, the body recognizes that as not safe. So then if the baby gets it through the skin quite early and then later on eats it, the body has recognized it as unsafe. So that's one of the reasons, particularly if babies have eczema, it's just as important for them to get those foods in early because it reduces that chance of getting food allergies. Now, certainly with people who have eczema, food can make it worse in some cases. But remember, eczema is genetic. And there's, you know, food isn't going to change your genes, but you will get some people who will notice they have a bit more of a flare up with certain foods. But again, go to your registered dietitian and check that out, because I've seen people automatically take kids off things like dairy, which is so important for things like calcium and protein for children, or they take them all off wheat and things like that. And often they don't need to be restricted. So certainly with eczema, the risk is a little higher for food allergy, but that's why we say get those foods in early. That's really important.
Now, a caller says, referring to food allergies, I went to my GP for a blood test for allergies. It came back clear. And okay. That was the doctor then finished. Symptoms continue to be bloating and constipation. What's my next step? The doctor has effectively told me that's all he can do.
Okay, so if you have a lot of bloating, constipation and discomfort, so food allergies can be one thing. So they've been ruled out, which is brilliant. The second thing to rule out is definitely celiac disease. So make sure you're eating gluten for at least 6 weeks. Get a blood test with your GP. If everything is ruled out and they're very sure you don't have other issues going on, the next step then is get them to refer you to a registered dietitian. So you can see a dietitian in the HSE or the registered dietitians who are private. Make sure they are CORU registered, because in Ireland, you know, pretty much anyone can call themselves nutrition experts. You want to make sure you're getting properly qualified. So dietitians have to be registered like doctors and nurses. Yep. So you can check that. But a registered dietitian who specializes in gut will be able to do a huge amount with you. But always rule out celiac disease, always rule out, as you said, you've had a look at the allergies, check if your GP has done a celiac test. They may have. If not, definitely get that one checked out and then see your dietitian.
Yeah, and the caller is saying our 6-year-old has a reaction to egg. We've noticed it from a young age, also has eczema, and recently seems to have developed a reaction to exposure to grass.
Well, what tends to track with eczema is eczema to food allergy to rhinitis to asthma. Is generally what you see in those children. So if you're not under the care of an allergy specialist, this is the time to go and get referred in and get that checked.
And in terms of weaning, I mean, most people will start weaning a child 6 months there or thereabouts, give or take. That would be the proper way to do it, you reckon?
Any time from 4 months on is fine. And you can actually give babies fish even from 4 months, and you know, so you can start straight in with that, and that's absolutely no problem. So, you know, lots I would have weaned both of my kids at 4 months, just got them started so they can have meat, chicken, fish, veg. Obviously, you're pureeing it right down for the pre-6 months. At 6 months, then absolutely bringing in dairy, peanut, those kind of foods from there. What we really want is babies are weaned by 6 months. So by the time they're 6 months, they've already started to try some of the more solid foods with that.
And as you've said, whereas by all means, introduce with a peanut butter, but not a big, huge teaspoon, you know, to
no,
do it in moderation.
You know, depending on if they're good at feeding themselves a little bit, sometimes spread on something can work really well, or just a little tip on your finger just to get them started.
Yeah, Sarah, thank you very much indeed for giving us this time this morning. It's important. And really, I suppose the takeaway message is, first and foremost, go to your GP first, get the tests done, ordered by your GP. Then after that, maybe, if you're not getting any answers, then perhaps then look for a referral specific to a HSC dietitian and pursue it that way. But the first protocol is going to be the GP.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's great.
Sarah Keogh, thank you very much indeed for speaking to us this morning.
Thank you.
That's Sarah there from a dietitian there with Safefood. And it's an interesting and an important conversation. And food allergies, you know, it's important to get it symptom, get, you know, if you have any symptoms especially. But I mean, to get this checked as quickly as possible, do it through the GP, and hopefully if you are in that situation, you will be able to get the answers that you need. Just gone 10:30, going to take a short break, back after these.
Watch the show live now on YouTube, Facebook and at highlandradio.com.
It's the Right Price Tiles and Wood Flooring biggest ever sale. Up to 50% off everything in store. All tiles, all wood flooring, all outdoor slabs, cladding and bathware, everything slashed in price. This sale is not to be missed. The Right Price Tiles and Wood Flooring biggest ever half price sale is now on.
Have you heard about the McIlhenny's M card? Now available exclusively in store. Sign up today to start earning and redeem once you hit 500 points. Register in store at our M card station on the first floor or at any till point. The M card, the new way to save at McIlhenny's.
Here's to the good stuff. The dip in the sea, the run after work, the catch up with friends, the comeback to ours, the Kerrygold butter that spreads straight from the fridge for hot buttered toast or a build-your-own sandwich, the chat round the table, the sharing of plates, of news and of tales, and the taste that means everything. Kerrygold spreadable butter, straight from the fridge. Kerrygold. May your table always be full.
Do you work or volunteer with children or young people? Under Children First, all organisations and individuals that provide services or activities to children should have child safeguarding measures in place to promote their welfare. This includes having policies on child safeguarding awareness and training, and the reporting of child protection concerns. Many organisations are also required to have a child safeguarding statement. To learn more about your obligations under Children First, visit gov.ie/children-first. Brought to you by the Government of Ireland.
It's the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. Some of your comments. Could you please wish Mark Diver and his Irish team the best of luck in the World Sea Fishing Championship? They're leaving today. Keep the lines tight. Caller says, your take on Gardaí using mobiles when driving is quite bizarre, to say the least. There's no excuse for using mobiles when driving, no matter what your job is. Now, I don't have a take on Gardaí using mobile phones per se. What I did say was that Gardaí receive very specialist training when driving a patrol car. Certainly they would use radios on a regular basis. They may have occasion to have to use a mobile phone to get communications from base or whatever over the course of doing their duties. That may be the case. I have not been privy to that training. I am not privy to the standard operational procedures of how things operate in Garda cars. But the one thing I will say is I don't buy the phrase, will Garda use their mobile phones in their cars, so will I. I do not buy that one. Absolutely. Sadly, we've accepted over 7,000 people into this country with no sign of increasing services. It's no wonder this country is fighting back. I, for one, totally understand the protest in the Dáil. And another caller says, 5 weeks ago, I took a terminally ill patient to the emergency department. I was left waiting 11 hours for a bed. This week, we're back again. I'm now waiting 24 hours. And sadly, my partner is giving up hope. Nothing is changing. The TDs had an incident at the Dáil and they get immediate action to protect them, but no one seems to care about what the public are suffering. When are things at Letterkenny Hospital going to change? And again, we will relate that comment from one of our callers, which is telling a very true story about something that's happening now. And we'll relate back to the discussion earlier about the HSE's overspend and public expenditure, saying the HSE has to rein in its spending. There is no doubt that there is more capacity needed at Letterkenny University Hospital and at other hospitals across the country. There is absolutely no doubt about that. So what we're going to have to try and do is square the HSE overspend with the fact that that extra capacity is absolutely needed. It's the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. 0749125000 for your calls. 00353749125000. If you're outside of the dialing area, you can text or WhatsApp us on 086 60 25000. Highland Hub on Facebook, at Highland Radio on Twitter or X. And you can watch the show unfold on our YouTube channel, Highland Radio Ireland, and also on our Highland Radio and Highland Radio News and Sports Facebook pages. Now, Patrick Kenny is a senior scientific officer in the Office of Radiation Protection and Environmental Monitoring. And we're going to speak to Patrick now about air quality, because you'll have, if you were listening during the newspaper review earlier, you'll recall concerns being expressed over air quality in this country. They're not meeting World Health Organization standards. Patrick, how serious is the situation we're in?
Yes, this is a serious issue from a public health perspective. Last year, and indeed for the last number of years, we met all of our EU legal requirements, but we didn't meet the more stringent health-based World Health Organization, or WHO, air quality guideline values, and there were concerning localized issues regarding air quality across Ireland. And why this is important is, again, from that public health perspective. Our estimate that we get from the European Environment Agency is that there are approximately 1,300 premature deaths every year in Ireland due to poor air quality, with the majority of those coming from PM2.5 or fine particulate matter. Those are very fine particles in our air that when we breathe in, they can penetrate very deeply into our lungs with very damaging impacts on our lungs themselves, but equally on our hearts and on our heart system. And the report we've out today is in an interactive format. It's got embedded videos, graphics, animations. And one of those infographics that is in there was developed by the Irish Heart Foundation, who worked with us, and we worked with them in partnership to have that in there. And that infographic speaks about some of the negative impacts of those very fine particles on our heart. But I suppose aside from even those very serious impacts from a premature death perspective, there are then a whole other range of impacts on life-limiting aspects on our hearts and on our lungs. Again, for those of us who have asthma or have COPD, like impacts on our everyday quality of life.
Now, Letterkenny has, for the past number of years, had a smoke ban in place in terms of fireplaces and so on. Smoky fuels are banned. Other measures are in place in Letterkenny. That, as we understand it, is now being extended out to the entire county. In Donegal, we have three monitoring stations. There are national stations in Letterkenny and Malinhead, and there's a local air monitoring site as well in Buncrana. What can be
there is indeed.
What can be told by collating figures from those sites? Has the introduction of the smoke fuel ban in Letterkenny some years ago had an appreciable impact on air quality in the area? And are you getting figures that suggest extending that out to the county and indeed further afield will actually have a beneficial impact?
I suppose the big change, there were two big changes legislation-wise last year. Sorry, there was a big change legislation-wide last year just at the turn before Christmas, and then there was a National Clean Air Strategy that came out just after Christmas. Just before Christmas, there was a nationwide smoky fuel ban, effectively, that was brought in place with new regulations. As of yet from that ban, because again, this data is looking at 2022. We were aware that last year a lot of people had already stocked up for the winter heating season before that ban, and had legally done so before that ban took effect in late October last year. So we should look to start seeing the impacts of that nationwide ban, hopefully through the winter of this year. And yes, if that ban is being adhered to and people are burning cleaner fuels, we should start to see less PM2.5, sorry, those fine particles in our air, because again, that ban is aimed at, I suppose, the more smokier fuels that produce more of that fine particulate matter that has that very damaging health impact. If I might say one other thing kind of linking through to this as we look into the winter, and just to say first, it's clearly very important that everyone is warm and comfortable in their homes. But we are aware, because there are various surveys that have been conducted, that there is a significant portion of houses that have more than one heating system, i.e. they'd have a gas or an oil heating system, or perhaps one of the air source heat pump type systems, and then they also have a solid fuel heating system. If you are one of those households and you have another heating system that enables you to be warm and comfortable in the winter time, and you don't need to light that secondary heating system that is possibly an open fire or a stove, again, particularly on those cold, still evenings, and I think we all know what I'm talking about here and that sort of weather condition, where you just tend to get a build-up and a build-up and a build-up of particles and other air pollutants in our air. If you have the option, because you have another system that can have you warm and comfortable in your home, to not use that secondary solid fuel heating system, you're going to have a really positive impact on the air quality for you, your neighbours, your whole community. So if there was one message for me to get out there at what we can do on a local level, it's for those of us and those who have secondary solid fuel heating systems to maybe consider whether you're going to actually use them or not, particularly, again, as I say, on those cold, still evenings. We also have our air quality data live from those stations that you just mentioned. It's on airquality.ie. Aside from us being able to know what the weather is from seeing the conditions and feeling the cold and the reports from Metair, and you can see the air quality status across those stations start to shift. And if that is shifting, again, if you are in a position to not use a secondary solid fuel heating system, you'll have a positive impact.
How close are we to meeting those World Health Organization targets? Because the question is going to be asked, is it going to be enough for people to say, OK, I will burn smokeless fuel instead of smoky fuel, or I'll use the oil now. We don't have the option of natural gas in Donegal. It's not piped in, so that's an option we don't have in most areas. But, you know, for those of us who have oil, and I suppose the other thing you have to take into consideration is the price of oil these days is going to, perhaps with some people, they're going to be trying to use less rather than more oil in their central heating systems if they can. But all those aside, is the use of fuel in open fires in domestic houses the main issue, or do we need to be doing more in terms of industry? Do we need to be doing more in terms of urbanisation? Because I would perhaps have doubts about whether introducing a ban on smoky coal will be enough to reach those World Health Organization targets we referenced earlier.
There's those World Health Organization targets. There's also, as I said, there's a clean air strategy that was published back about April of this year. And that's essentially looking to align over a number of years where we are in Ireland with those World Health Organization guideline values. There are also moves at a European level, the European legislation that we do currently comply with, but that's about 15, 16 years old at this point in time. It's under revision at the moment in Europe, and that revision is going to bring that towards those World Health Organization guideline values as well too. Both in the clean air strategy and at a European level, it's likely that this will be looking to happen over a number of years, because this is going to be challenging, Donald. There's no doubt about that. This is going to take a period of time. As you say, Donegal and large sectors of Donegal, and I think most of Donegal, not on the gas network, through that clean air strategy, and I think through other actions from government and local government, there are going to have to be supports out to everybody in their homes in order to make these changes. Because unfortunately, the bulk and the dominant source for PM2.5 is domestic solid fuel heating systems. There are contributions from other activities, but the dominant source is domestic solid fuel heating systems. And there is going to have to be, I suppose, over a period of time, because it's certainly not going to happen overnight, support towards members of the public to move towards cleaner heating systems and indeed towards cleaner fuels. If I could just add as well, in that report that we've out there, we have an embedded infographic about how you heat your home, the cleaner air quality choices and the less air quality choices. It's done as a along that spectrum is going to be positive for you from an air quality perspective, and ultimately for you and your family from a health perspective. And again, that spectrum starts out at the side of the spectrum where you have an open fire burning smokier fuel, going all the way through the different heating systems, ultimately through to an air source heating system. But we fully appreciate that making that kind of a jump is a huge cost that obviously the public would need to be supported for. So again, if you are at the side of the spectrum that is in the solid fuel side of it, if you can make a move in, and if all the move you can make is towards having a more efficiently burning solid fuel heating system, that will be better for air quality. If you can choose to use cleaner burning fuels that are producing less smoke, that will be better for air quality. Again, it's all about the burning temperature that you're getting the fuel at. And the higher the burn temperature and the cleaner and drier the fuel, the less particles that you're going to produce. There's also an ABC for cleaner air that the Department of the Environment put together about a year ago. There's a link through to that from our report too. And that is all talking about, A, do you need to burn the fuel? B, if you do need to burn the fuel, to burn the cleanest fuel possible. And C, which is to ensure that the device you're burning the fuel in is actually maintained, i.e. you get your chimney swept and you maintain that stove or fireplace. I mean, there's the practicalities of not wanting to have a chimney fire, etc. But equally, again, from that burn temperature and getting the highest burning temperature that you can, if you've got your chimney swept and you're maintaining your stove, etc., you're going to have a much higher burn temperature. Just coming back to the open fires.
I'm sorry, Patrick, I'm going to have to cut across you there, but we have limited time at this point. But we will certainly have put the information we have up on our website, and you've given us a lot of food for thought. So, Patrick Kenny, thank you very much indeed for that this morning. This is the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. Now, if you want a fun night out, we have a doozy for you in the Millennium Forum on the 8th of October. Remembering Joe is the 15th anniversary tour. Remembering Joe Dolan, featuring members of Joe's family, reflecting Joe's career and telling some of the stories of what happened on those wonderful days on the road. And let's face it, all of us of a certain age have heard the phrase, there's no show like a Joe show. I'm going to tell you a very short story. My brother played in a sort of a rock band, and he asked someone for advice about, you know, stage persona and everything else. And someone said to him, you want to know how to act on a stage? Go see Joe Dolan. You see Joe Dolan, that's how you act on a stage. Joined by Joe's nephew, Ray, who's taking part, of course, in that show. Ray is on Zoom. Ray, a very good morning to you.
Good morning to you, Donald, and hello to all your listeners. And it's great to be on Highland Radio.
Thank you very much indeed, Ray. Now, Ray, there's no show like a Joe show. Let's start there. He was the ultimate he was the ultimate stage performer, Joe, wasn't he? He could turn his hand to any form of music. He could be covering Blur one minute and singing Oh Holy Night the next minute. But whatever he was doing on a stage, he had you in the palm of his hand, and he was not letting go for love nor money.
Absolutely. And I played with him from about 1984, and I've never, ever seen a bad show. Always enthusiastic, always full of energy. But he had an aura about him, and there was a great power about him as well. So when he was on stage, he demanded you to look at him and to get involved in the show. And he had an amazing voice, absolutely amazing, you know, and unique. So, yeah, he was quite special, and he done his own thing, and he was quite independent of everything. And we toured for many, many years. I mean, we had, going back to that time, that's it's 17 years ago since Uncle Joe passed away.
Yeah.
I didn't think it's 17, this one. But, I mean, we had our own light man, our own sound man, but it was a unit. So Joe was very much part of the unit as well. So he really, it was, to him, it was how it looked, how it presented, how it came across. And every night then there'd be a debate over the show and what went well and what didn't go well. And but he was quite a perfectionist.
And he was very a canny businessman as well. I mean, you know, I've no doubt he would have made sure that he negotiated the best deals with promoters and venues and so on and so forth. I mean, he was no daw, as they say in Waterford.
Well, yeah, are you from Waterford?
I'm from Waterford, yeah, originally.
Up the Dacia, absolutely. But we some great shows down there. Well, my father was really the businessman. Joe was very much he left the business to my father and mainly let him run that end of it. So, as I said, my father's a very important part of the show as well. He was the man that started off with the idea of just playing music locally and then ended up traveling all over the world. But yeah, they were a unit because, as I said, Joe done the singing, and my father actually thought at the beginning that he was the star.
Yeah.
Until they'd done a few shows, and lo and behold, he went, oops, Daisy, this is the star, you know.
His the little brother was upstaging him, he found.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. So he just took a back seat and says, this is the man. So as my father says, he definitely found Joe had the X factor, and Ben, as I said, found him there. So we're on the tour bus, which actually I sing on every day. We've been singing for the last 1,280 days, every day on our tour bus. And this is our tour bus. So we've got Joe in the background here, and we bring him everywhere. As I said, he's always with us no matter what, you know.
Now, Ben, your dad tells a lot of the stories of the days on the road over the course of the show. So remembering Joe, the 15th anniversary tour. I mean, you know, there's a lot more to it than just singing the songs. The songs will be sung, of course, and they'll be performed with gusto. But the stories are going to be told as well. It's very much an evening with Joe. There's a lot more to this than just music.
Exactly. Well, what I feel is what's after happening is that the show is after taking a whole new turn with the new singers, as I say, and bringing it to a whole. It's become something else, but just continuing with the music, because the music is so strong and brings back so many memories to everyone who comes to the show. I mean, we had a super show last year, a super tour, and we're continuing on the rest of this, and then we'll continue into our tour next year again. And that'll be called the annual Joe Dolan Festival. Yeah. So a new way of approaching it. But yeah, Joe left so many memories and so much goodwill. It's still unbelievable. And people talk about him as if it was only yesterday when he passed away. Yeah. We're locked in that time, but still we're moving forward because we're bringing the show onto the stage again with a different approach and a different sort of look. But Joe is always there in the background and always keeping an eye on us and in our hearts as well, because everyone, when they hear them songs, it brings them back to them times, whether we were playing in Raphoe or whether we were playing in Donegal or whether we were playing actually the Forum in Derry. Originally, we played that a good few times as well. And I think we'd done the new Forum, the Millennium Forum, a few times with Uncle Joe as well.
The Rialto you would have played probably before the Forum, would have been the Rialto. Yeah.
Good man.
It's now a Pennies. Or sorry, a Primark, as they call it in the north, but it is a Pennies now, yeah. Or Primark, sorry. I really should say Primark. What's interesting, Ray, is that the appetite for the songs has never gone. And I mean, I'm sure you get as big a cheer when you're on the stage and you're giving it loads and then you go, when God created a woman. You know, I'm sure you get as big a roar now as you would have got back in the day.
Absolutely. And I mean, and the buzz off the show is amazing and the reaction off them is amazing. People want to relate that you are, you know, people will say, oh, just as good as Joe. And people want to relate you back into Uncle Joe, like that there's a piece of that we bring with us, you know, whether it's an Irish trait of ours or whatever. But we got a great lift off the show. And my father, as I said, he's 89 now. And he's still mad for the road. Like, he'll sit onto the bus here with us and we'll head off up and down the country. And he's still there with us, which is super. And teaching us now as well. So we're always learning from our elders, as I say, you know.
Ray Dolan, the show is Remembering Joe. Now, it's called the 15th Anniversary Tour, but as you say, sadly, Joe's 17 years gone now. So this has been on the road pretty much 2 years. I mean, you know, as I say, it's called, we still have the 15th.
It was a year there. It was 07 that he passed away. Yeah. Now, so, as I said, 15, 16, there's a few days, as I say, we've lost 15, some years already. Yeah. But it's been a great tour. And we're really looking forward to singing more music, as I said, all over the country and into next year as well. Yeah. And would you have time for us to sing a song on the show?
Yes, we have. Of course, we have time. I will apologise now to Donna Marie. News is going to be a little bit late. We'll take the break after it. This is an opportunity you are not going to turn down, and the listeners would never forgive me if I did. Go for it.
It's a song called Bonjour, Mademoiselle, and I have a choice. I can sing this on the show. You're a lady I'll always remember. Sweet lady I'll never forget.